side by side, amid dozens of other puffing men and women in sweat-stained gym clothes. "I did everything wrong," Wanderley moaned, wiping perspiration from her forehead. "Were you scared?" Pancho asked, striding along easily on the treadmill. "I mean, the sim's pretty damn realistic, and you've only been outside once before." Tears were welling in Wanderley's eyes. "I wasn't frightened, Pancho. Really, I wasn't. It was just so confusing. It was like being lost in a blizzard. I couldn't tell up from down. I couldn't do anything right." "Well, it was your first time in the rings. Gotta expect some disorientation. It's all new to you." But to herself, Pancho was wondering if Nadia would ever be able to handle a ride through the rings in the excursion suit. She could kill herself real easy out there. "I'll do better the next time," Wanderley said, as her treadmill's timer bell chimed. "I really will. I'll know what to expect, at least. I'm a fast learner." Pancho turned off her machine, too. "Yeah, maybe so. But you're going to need a lot more time in the simulator," she said, "and some practice runs outside as well. How long do you think it'll take?"
"6 months, maybe more."
"6 months?"
"3, 4 months at least," said Pancho, "depending on how fast you catch on."
"I can't wait that long."
Wanderley stepped off her treadmill and started for the locker room.
"Why not?" Pancho demanded, following her. "You in a hurry to kill yourself?"
Lowering her voice, Wanderley said, "Pancho, we're sneaking this whole operation, remember? If Urbane finds out about it, he'll scratch the whole deal. He'll report me to the ICU, say I'm a loose cannon, going out on my own without authorization."
"Better on getting killed," Pancho pointed out.
"No, it's not," Wanderley retorted, with such quiet vehemence that Pancho was taken aback. Heatedly, Wanderley added, "I'd rather die out there than sit here and be considered a failure, an idiot who claims she found life forms in the rings but couldn't prove it." Pancho shook her head, thinking that Saturn's rings would still be there for a pot full of millions of years. They changed into their regular clothes and went to the cafeteria at last. Pancho was hungry enough to eat half the menu, but she restrained herself and followed Wanderley's lead, fruit salad and a flavored soy drink. Just as they sat down at an unoccupied table, Holly came stomping up to them and banged her lunch tray down so hard the tea sloshed out of her cup.
"The sumbitch fired me," Holly snapped, slamming into the vacant seat between Pancho and Wanderley.
"What?"
"Everly, the slimeball fired me, kicked me out of the human resources department. Don't you people watch the morning news?"
"We've been in the simulator since 07:30, Pancho said, "and then the gym."
Fuming, Holly grabbed at the sandwich on her tray and tore off a big bite.
Wanderley asked, "He fired you because you're opposing him in the election?"
"Why else?" Holly mumbled, her mouth full of sandwich.
"But he didn't say it that way, I bet," Pancho said.
"Hell no." Holly swallowed hard. "His news release was all about the interests of efficient government and fair play. The creep."
Wanderley dimpled into a smile.
"I've never seen you so angry."
"And he's making a major speech tonight," Holly grumbled. "Probably going to bring up that idea of mining the rings again."
Wanderley's smile crumpled.
"He can't do that."
"Wanna bet?" Holly and Pancho said in unison. Jumping to her feet, Wanderley shouted,
"He can't! I won't let him!"
People at nearby tables turned to stare at her.
"How are you going to stop him?"
Pancho asked softly, reaching for the sleeve of Wanderley's tunic. Sitting again, Wanderley stared at Pancho for a long, wordless moment. At last she said,
"Pancho, we've got to get me into the rings before the election."
"That's 3 months off, isn't it?" Holly nodded. "June 1st.
"I've got to prove that there are living organisms in the rings," Wanderley said, her eyes welling with tears. "And then the IAA will declare the rings off limits for commercial exploitation."
Pancho shook her head sadly. "Nadia, it's going to take more than 3 months to get you ready. Otherwise, you'll just be killing yourself."
"I don't care. I've got to do it, Pancho. I've got to."
Timoshenko wished he knew more about computer programming. He sat in his office, scrolling through the reports his staff had prepared on the equipment they'd brought in for testing from the solar mirrors. "There's nothing wrong," Timoshenko saw, Everything works well within design limits. But when these very same motors and actuators were outside, they performed erratically. He knew the problem wasn't major. The deviations from normal parameters were so minor that hardly anyone even noticed them. But they were deviations, Timoshenko told himself, and they shouldn't exist. And to make matters worse, the replacement parts that his crew had put into the mirrors were starting to show similar deviations. Just small fluctuations from normal performance. The mirrors moved a few seconds before the computer program was to activate them. They made minor adjustments that reduced the amount of sunlight focused into the habitat by a trifle. Only a trifle now, Timoshenko thought, but what happens if these fluctuations grow bigger? We could all die in here if the solar mirrors fail in a major way. He shook his head. There's nothing wrong with the motors or the actuators, he told himself. We've tested them 16 times now, and they perform within design specs each time. But they don't work within the specs when they're outside, attached to the mirrors. Is the computer program at fault? He wondered. He ran a hand through his bristly mop of hair. I'll have to get somebody from the computer group to go over the mirror program, line by line, byte by byte. They won't be happy about it. Nothing but dog work, thankless drudgery. But it's got to be done. Or else we could all end up in the dark, and the temperature outside is near absolute zero. A super Siberia.
17 February 2096. Campaign speech. Zeke Berkowitz couldn't help but admire the thoroughness of Eberle's preparations for this speech. He's a terrific stage manager, Berkowitz thought. He knows how to make a maximum impact. Eberle had cajoled only a few dozen of his own staff people to serve as the live audience for his speech. But the conference room he had chosen was small enough to make the place look crowded. Since most of the habitat's citizens would watch the speech from their homes, Eberle's flunkies were enough to make it seem like a sizable and enthusiastic audience. Berkowitz had his staff remove the conference table from the room and set up rows of chairs for the audience. A small lectern stood at the front of the room. Berkowitz's minicams were positioned in the rear. At precisely 2100 hours, Sonia Vickers, the newly appointed acting director of the Human Resources Department, stepped daintily to the lectern and looked out over the audience that filled the room to capacity. She was elfin slim, blonde, youthful, smiling. "I'm glad to see so many of you here in person," she began, "to witness this important policy statement by our chief administrator." Lifting her eyes to look directly into Berkowitz's central camera, she continued, "And to those of you at home, welcome." She hesitated a heartbeat, then said, "Now, without further ado, I would like to introduce your chief administrator, a man who has served all of us selflessly and very capably, Malcolm Eberle." The audience rose to their feet on cue and cheered enthusiastically.
In the living room of her apartment, Holly sat on her sofa, flanked by her sister and Jake Wanamaker. The screen on the opposite wall showed Eberle smiling brilliantly as he walked the 6 steps to the lectern, where he shook Vickers's hand and thanked her for her introduction. Impulsively, it seemed, she gave him a peck on the cheek. "That was scripted, betcha," Holly muttered. Eberle beamed at his audience as they applauded lustily. After a few moments, he gestured for silence. He had to repeat the gesture several times before they stopped clapping and sat back in their seats. "That was scripted, too," Holly grumbled. "Take note," said Poncho. "You can learn a few things from this guy." Eberle gripped the sides of the lectern and bowed his head for a moment. The audience fell absolutely silent.
"Thank you all for that magnificent welcome," he said, his voice low as if choked with emotion. "This is a momentous occasion," Eberle went on, sweeping the room with his startling blue eyes, then looking directly into the camera. His voice rose, strengthened. "You, all of you, every citizen of this habitat, has the chance to make history. Tonight we are embarking on a contest that will decide who will direct this habit.